Well, as we've been talking about also, the UFO files in Wales have been released, shedding light on alien sightings. In a moment, the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe, joins us as we go live to the United Kingdom next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Well, we call him the greatest storyteller ever born, and we are going live to the United Kingdom this hour to talk with Lionel Fanthorpe. Lionel, how are you, my friend?
I'm absolutely fine, George. Great to be on the show and great to talk to you.
Always great to hear your voice. I tell you, every time I hear that voice, I get excited because I know it's story time. It's great. So what have you been up to? What's going on?
Well, I'm currently doing a regular show for BBC Radio 4 called The Seventh Dimension, and that's all about the strange and the weird and the kind of things I'm interested in. And then over and above that, we've got a new book we're working on numerology in that big series of books that we've done on all kinds of mysteries, you know, like the mystery of time and mysteries of haunted castles. So we've got the next one due out very soon in that series. On top of that, I'm doing a lot of teaching. You know, I teach up to PhD level, so I've got university students who are still coming to get their dissertations finished. And one way and another, we keep out of mischief.
Well, that's great. So, UFO files of Wales have been released. 7,000 documents spanning four decades.
Yep. It is really amazing. And the things that are in those 7,000 documents, one of the things that you may have heard of, and friends in the USA may have heard of, the so-called Dyfed Triangle. Dyfed is a region of Wales. And, of course, after the Bermuda Triangle became so famous, when there were sightings of what seemed to have been UFOs in this area of Wales, all around the Dyfed part of the country, so it seemed natural that Welsh friends would refer to it as the Dyfed Triangle. And then, over and above that, we've had over 20 detailed sightings that were reported to the police and, of course, to our Ministry of Defense over here. One of the strangest came from Rossilli Bay on the Gower Peninsula, and that was back in 2005, about 7 years ago. And what I think you and I might spend a moment considering was what this might have been, whether it was possibly something from out there, something extraterrestrial, or whether, just as interestingly, it might have been some sort of time warp. You see, what they saw there in Rossilli Bay on the Gower Peninsula, witnesses described it, especially those who were old enough to remember the Second World War. They said it looked like a German aircraft, because you remember at the end of the Second World War, the Germans were experimenting with rockets. Then there was one of these strange Luftwaffe prototype jets, and that's what was described as being over the Gower Peninsula in 2005. Now, one set of ideas is that there was one of those time glitches that we've talked about in the past, where, you know, the famous theory where time is like a ball of wool and where two strands cross. If you go round the long way of the strand, that's maybe a period of 60, 70, 80 years. But if you've got somebody who is sensitive to the proximity of the point where they cross, then that sensitive person might be able to see something that was on that time strand 70, 80, 100 years ago. And I wonder if that's what we were really having reported. Some honest and genuine witnesses described it as like a 1944 prototype Luftwaffe jet. So I think there are two possible mysteries there.
And, you know, some of these mysteries, Lionel, as you know, can be explained away by natural occurrences or aircraft. I'm convinced, for example, that what we have now as drones flying all over the place, people probably saw them 10, 15 years ago as prototypes, and they said, oh my gosh, a UFO. But that's not to negate the real possibility of visitation here, is it?
Oh, no. One of the other things that I like to consider as part of the arguments for and against UFOs as being of extraterrestrial origin is the very size of the universe. And there's something else that's very mysterious which gets us into philosophy and theology at the same time. If we think about the relative size of a human being like you or me or our listeners compared to the smallest of the subatomic particles, you know, this famous Higgs boson that they've just been experimenting with in Switzerland. Well, now, the difference in size between a Higgs boson and a human being is relatively the same as the difference in size between a human being and the entire universe. It's almost as if whoever planned the universe said, hey, if I put my intelligent observers midway between the smallest and the biggest, they'll be in the ideal situation to comment on both and learn. Just a way out theory, but I think it's interesting that we are that size. Now, coming back to our ideas about the size of the universe and UFOs, well, if only one star system in a thousand has a planetary system, and if only one in a thousand of those planets is capable of sustaining intelligent life, and if only one of in a thousand of those that could actually do, and then if only one in a thousand of them has got faster than light travel and has come to visit us, there are still millions of potential sources of extraterrestrial visitors in UFOs.
If not billions, Lionel. If not billions.
It could well be billions. And when we look at it that way, those sightings that so many good and honest people have come up with, going across from Wales to the opposite side of the country where Patricia and I came from in Norfolk, there was a guy there named Johnson who was a very, very reliable and good reporter on UFOs. And he used to gather all the reports together and analyze them. He was an engineer before he retired, and then he put all that engineering expertise and skill and scientific approach into the reports of the UFOs. And he and I were talking one day, and he told me that the most amazing case he had ever had reported to him was a young man, electrician, driving his van home after a day's work. And suddenly, this is in a town called Holt, H-O-L-T, in North Norfolk. Suddenly, the guy's engine cuts out. Gets out of the van, looks around, and there in a field, not 200 yards away from him, is what looks like a big, flat, silver disc ship. At this point, he is scared. And who could blame him?
Who could blame him, exactly?
He gets into the ditch next to his van, and he then reported seeing humanoid figures wearing what he described as glowing, silver-colored overalls. And they seem to be looking for him. They are approaching the van. And he holds his breath and keeps absolutely still in the bottom of this dry ditch where he's taken refuge. And they move away again. He looks up, and that silver disc is taking off vertically and then vanishing at enormous speed and acceleration. He gets back into his van, and whatever had caused his engine to cut out is now gone. He just restarts the engine, drives home, I think we might say, a sadder, wiser man. And he reported that. It was a good, honest witness, and he reported all of that, I said, to my friend Johnson, who was responsible for collecting the stories at the time. And it's so much like the descriptions that we got here in Wales from the witnesses who were telling us that they had seen not only the disc-type ships, but they had seen these strange figures moving around. There's the other case of the driver up in Flintshire, and that goes back nearly 20 years to 1996, and he reported it to the police. And the report was that the object he saw, very large, very bright, flames were coming out of the rear, but there was no noise. And the other thing that he found amazing was it was barely 20 feet above the ground, and it was moving very, very fast. I mean, that's lower than a roof.
Planes won't fly 20 feet off the ground.
Safely, no.
They
simply don't.
That's suicide.
And the driver was really, the guy who reported this was really shaken up about it. Said he'd never seen anything like it before. And round about the same time, in fact, on the same day, there was a sighting in Anglesey and another one at Chirk, which are, you know, areas of Wales. And I'm like you, I just don't know. Some of these things, when you were talking about the prototype drones, which I think was very sensible, there are undoubtedly all kinds of experiments going on. There may be aircraft designers who are working for private industry who are coming up with something pretty secret, which if their design for their company can do things that other aircraft can't do, then there's going to be a lot of money in it commercially as a you know, a business undertaking. And there are also, I'm quite sure, a number of secret government laboratories where experiments are being made. And so some of the things that you and I and Joe Public see may be perfectly normal, perfectly ordinary human products, but they're innovative and they're things that we don't see very often. But then there's always yet another possibility, and you know me, I like to go through as many possibilities as I can think of. And we looked at the possibility of that time glitch with the thing that looked like a Luftwaffe prototype rocket. And then, you know, the theory of what I would call the parallel universes, the worlds of if, what some of our physicists refer to as the multiverse. Is it possible that that is real, that there are multiverses, and that in one or other of them, these flying discs are part of the aviation system in this parallel universe, which has developed in different ways.
Which might explain why they disappear so quickly.
Absolutely. That would go a long way towards explaining that, George, if it was, if it was visible for just a few moments, where the two parallel universes had come unusually close, and maybe the thing had even strayed through, if the boundary at that point was a little bit indistinct. And then, by the time six of us have got together and said, hey, here it is, it's over Chirk, let's go and have a look. And then, zoof, it's gone back to its own universe. It's, you know, one of those things that could be an explanation. The other possibility that I like to think of, if they are from a civilization other than our own, is the idea that we don't have to look out there, but that there may be tiny residual vestigial traces of some of the old civilizations, which a lot of people believe were here before us, the Lemurians, the Atlanteans. The Earth has been here a very, very long time. And we've been here a very long time. And who's to say that empires with high technology may have risen and fallen, and just a few traces of them remain? And there are still some remote, unexplored areas where such people might have chosen to conceal themselves and just occasionally to come out and have a look at the rest of us to see what Homo sapiens is up to now that they're no longer with us.
You know, Lionel, these reports from Wales, they must take these UFO cases pretty darn seriously out there, don't they?
Oh, yes. Yes, they do. And the Welsh are wonderful people. I would think of myself as an adopted Welshman or a naturalized Welshman, because being an Englishman from Norfolk on the opposite side of the country, I don't have the same wonderful genetic inheritance that the Welsh do. But if you come to an old Welsh family that's been here for generations, they have enormous gifts for music, for poetry, for literature. They are writers and they're imaginative thinkers, artists, sculptors. That side of the Welsh mind is superb. Now, what I suspect is that what goes with that gift of art and music and poetry and creativity is a kind of hypersensitivity and an interest in all things paranormal, that the Welsh mind, confronted by what seems to be an alien in a UFO, would neither be frightened nor dismissive, but would want to investigate, would want to learn more about it, would want to check on where it came from, to ask friends and neighbors, did you see that thing as well? So this is causing, now that these documents have been released, as on the Welsh BBC News, this is going to cause enormous interest because of what I regard as this very gifted and talented Welsh mindset. And we almost feel that we've had our own Roswell incident here with with that so-called Dyfed Triangle. And one of the things is that the Welsh will take it seriously. They're not afraid of calling in the authorities. That's why we've had so many reports, 7,000 documents. Whereas some people might hesitate and say, well, I don't think I'm going to say anything about that. I think people might think I was daft if I said I'd seen a flying saucer. But the Welsh attitude is, I have seen something. It's that self-confidence. I have seen something. I know what I've seen. I'm going to report it to the authorities, which, again, as I said, where those 7,000 reports came from. And in one of the cases, a lady called Rosa Granville, who had a hotel at Little Haven, she woke up in the night and saw, as she described it, with complete honesty, as a flying saucer ship and then a silver alien shape nearby. The reports were made at the time to a member of parliament, an MP called Nick Edwards, who is still very much interested in it. And the whole idea is Welsh are perceptive of these things. They're imaginative and interested. And they will report it to the authorities with no fear of being thought stupid. They say, look, I know what I saw. And they'll talk to the MP, they'll talk to the police, they'll talk to officers from the Ministry of Defence. And if only more people would do that, it would be really good. And we might find we were getting closer to solving the mystery.
It would. Lionel, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back, go to your ghost stories file during the break and pull them out. Plus, we'll take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be those Friday the 13th open lines, so get ready for that. And when we come back in a moment, we'll take your phone calls and talk with Lionel Fanthorpe about some scary ghost stories next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. But with Lionel Fanthorpe, we're going to take your phone calls and also Lionel, what is it about ghost stories that people just love? They love to get scared.
Yes, I think that's a part of it, because when a lot of us have to work really hard at pretty routine jobs, then we do crave for some kind of excitement. And though getting happy is the ideal diversion from routine, getting scared is better than not having a diversion at all. So I think that one of the things is to escape from what might otherwise be monotonous. Another thing I think is that we are all curious. I think two of God's greatest gifts to the human race are a sense of humor and a sense of curiosity.
Right.
And it's because we don't know, just as when you and I were discussing the UFO phenomena, we don't know what they are. We have all sorts of interesting theories. We can put those theories up together and discuss them. And it's the same with ghosts. Is it some sort of a time slip that has accounted for somebody from our generation being able to see someone who was here in the 18th century or the 19th century? Have we peered across time? Is it this idea we talked about again of multiverses, where what we think of as a ghost is actually somebody from another universe? And, of course, one of those theories sets out to account for those doppelgangers. It's when you see yourself, or you think you've seen yourself. Is it you, but from a parallel universe? Now, the classic example of that, and the one that had so many witnesses, was the young lady teacher in Switzerland, in one of those very expensive, exclusive, what we used to call finishing schools, where young ladies were sent to learn all the things they needed as they grew up.
Right.
And she was a very popular teacher, and her class normally had their attention riveted on her when she was making notes on the blackboard and then talking to them about the lesson material. But she glanced over her shoulder from writing on the board and saw that every girl in the class was staring out of the window in awe-stricken disbelief. And she just couldn't understand it, because normally she had such good relationships with them, and they were always interested in her lessons. So she put the chalk down, walked across to the classroom window, looked to see what the girls were looking at, and she saw herself walking through the school gardens. This happened on four or five other occasions when she appeared to be in two places at once. Finally, the principal said, "I'm sorry, we're losing students over this. They're telling their parents, and the parents are taking them home, and I'm losing money. I'm going to give you a term's pay in lieu of notice and say, sorry, you're a wonderful teacher, but we've got to put a stop to this." And so she went back to the UK. But, you see, suppose that in one probability track, she was not teaching at that period, but was walking through the school gardens to enjoy the flowers. And in the other probability track, the real existential track, in which she was living her life and was conscious of what was happening, she was writing notes on the blackboard. But somehow or other, the two tracks came perilously close together. So one explanation, you know, of the ghost phenomena is that one. We've looked at time, we've looked at multiverses, and of course what I call the Shakespearean and Dickensian type of ghost is the one that has come back with a purpose. A classic example of that one was what my dear old friend Canon Noel Boston told me years ago, and he, like me, was a priest who was interested in the paranormal. And there was a wonderful account of a monk in the cathedral at Norwich in Norfolk. And so many reliable witnesses, members of the cathedral choir, saw this guy. And he was apparently trying to fish something out from between two of the stone tiles on the floor of the muniment room in the cathedral. And at last, when some repairs were carried out, The floor tiles were lifted, the big stone floor tiles, and a groat, which was a four-pence piece, little silver groat from hundreds of years in the past, was found in almost perfect condition, as though it had just been minted. And it was sold for a lot of money to a collector, and the money was put into the cathedral funds. And the monk, the ghost of the monk, who had apparently been looking for that four-pence piece, never appeared again. It was as if, like the Shakespearean and Dickensian ghosts, he had turned up with a purpose, with a mission. So there's the spirit of the departed human being who feels that he's left something unfinished. Then there's what you might call the stone tape theory, where impressions of an event get recorded in the fabric.
Forever.
Okay.
Yep. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yeah, hello? I just got you. Well, I lost you for a minute. Are you okay now?
Okay, I can hear you.
Good.
Okay, let's take some calls here, Lionel, all right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got you here. Let's go to Kinston, North Carolina. Seth, you're with us. Go ahead.
Hey, an honor to be with you, George. I'm a young fan, kind of new fan, but a big fan of the show.
Great. You happen to be on with the greatest storyteller ever born.
I know. I'm impressed. I'm honored, really. But anyway, I'm sorry to jump back a little bit to the UFO thing, if that's all right.
No, that's all fine. That's what we're talking about, too.
I just read a book. I was wondering if you had read it about, I think it was Annie Jacobson, about Area 51 and all of that.
Sure did.
I was wondering, she claimed that she had a source that had said that the Russians had actually concocted something with UFOs, and I was wondering if maybe the United States was embarrassed, possibly, by not having the same information as other countries, and maybe that's why they were kind of lax on letting anything out.
Well, absolutely, and I'll let you listen on the radio, Seth, but there's no question part of the theory of the crash at Roswell was it could have been some kind of Soviet craft that they were playing and experimenting with. We get, Lionel, all kinds of theories of that. What do they think of Roswell in the United Kingdom?
Well, Roswell is a source of great excitement here, and I like the theory that Seth just came up with, that you know, from the Annie Jacobson book, that we've got to remember, I think, and you, with all your broadcasting and news and current affairs experience, George, you're the expert on this. We know how sensitive politicians are. They get embarrassed very, very easily. And they would not like it thought that somebody, some rival group, had got ahead of them. And that would be a good reason for, you know, keeping the mouth very tightly closed. So I think there's some sense in that theory as one genuine possibility. The other factor is, if we'll say country A, country B, country C is nearly succeeding with an experiment, and one of their experimental craft is brought down or comes down in another country who are also experimenting with this and aren't quite so far ahead, if you can obtain some technological advantage from a crashed advanced vehicle that, you know, you don't want to tell your people that, hey, we got this from them. You want to say, it was our technologists who made this. And the number of claims, I think, over the centuries to having invented something that you actually found elsewhere. And then, of course, we take that a stage further. What if there are intelligent extraterrestrial aliens who are doing deals with one country or another? We will give you this little bit of extra technology, and in return you will do this, and for us it's the old quid pro quo. We'll do a deal. But doing a deal with guys from another planet near, what should we say, Proxima Centauri or wherever, or Sirius, it may not be a good idea, and it'd be far better for the nations of the world, countries A, B, C, and D, to get together and say, look, we may have certain differences, but fundamentally, We're all human beings. We're all terrestrial humanoids. We've got to be with each other, not with them against each other.
What if they cut a deal to abduct us and take us away, and governments simply say, fine, just give us the technology?
Yeah. You see, the idea of abduction and the number of disappearances is quite frightening. There was a recent news item here in the UK, which I'm sure got to the States and got worldwide, about the number of children who have disappeared. And of course, an alien technology wanting to get hold of human beings, what would be more likely than that they would want human children
could
be indoctrinated, trained, developed, changed in strange ways that adults perhaps can't be changed? And then when they've had them for 5 or 10 years, they give them a new identity and they drop them back amongst us. It's a science fiction story there waiting to be written.
That's a great story. Let's go to Wummelsdorf, Pennsylvania. Cindy is with us. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
This is totally unrelated, but I've been searching and searching to find out what the stars are in the northeastern sky that are lined up and down. There's a real bright one, and I see it from the time I get in my car, when I get on the highway, till I get to work.
I would guess, Lionel, there's probably a planetary alignment underway, huh?
Yes. The things that we see at their brightest are nearly always the planets, because they're so much closer to us. And if we get them into a particular alignment, then it does look so significant. And let's just take this thought. The human brain is an electrochemical device, and it's a highly sensitive device. And when you line up, even though they're millions of miles out there, when you line up a group of planets, as the old astrologers used to teach, then the electromagnetic, the gravitational pull, you see, even when light comes to us from the sun, it's so much more than just light. There's all kinds of radiation in it. And if you have an alignment, and I said thousands of years ago, this is what the astrologers were thinking, then that will have particular power. It's like a tug-of-war team. If you get six men or six girls all behind the other on the rope and pull, far more effective than if they're pulling from different angles. So that lineup is like the tug-of-war people in a good team on the rope, and they'll have far more effect on the rope than if they're coming at it from different perspectives. And so the astrologers weren't always wrong when they suggested that a particular lineup of the planets and the stars could have effects on Earth. And just to ally that with the mysteries of the pyramids and the way that, you know, the mysterious shaft in the Great Pyramid appears to be pointing at one particular star. And it's almost as though it was set up to allow the soul of the pharaoh buried in the pyramid to make his way out among the gods and to the heavens. So this idea of lining things up, Stonehenge is another example. The stones of Stonehenge, according to some experts, line up with particular solar, lunar, and stellar configurations at different times of the year. I think, Cindy, you've put your finger on a very real and very important mystery.
Marilyn is in Springfield, Illinois now. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I'm so glad to be talking to you, George. I've listened to you for years.
Well,
Lionel has a wonderful voice, does he? My goodness.
He does. He sure does.
This is a true story. I've been trying to get a hold of you for years. Back in the 50s, my father was into flying saucers. He believed in them. He went to Mountain View, Arkansas. We had an actual visitation at our house. A man come to our house. I was a teenager, knocked on my door, and asked mentally asked me if my father, he didn't say my father, he said his name, was he at home? And mentally, I projected that he was downtown in Jacksonville at the park talking to different people, because he did. He lectured young people from the college there. He was way ahead of his time. He believed in UFOs. We even went to California to George Adamski's camp in California. He even used to sign his letters as a flying saucer expert of Jacksonville, Illinois. I'll never forget this man. And I remember him reading my mind, and I was thinking, well, I had read the Seth books, and I thought, oh, he can't be from Venus. He's too old. And the man smiled, and the thought came into my head, he's a teacher. And I thought, oh, no, this can't be true. And as soon as I sent out the remark, I didn't believe it, he started talking. Instead of reading my mind, he started asking me where Mr. Babs was. And I said, well, he's downtown, or he's at the park, and he's talking to so-and-so. And he thanked me and walked away. I wish to this day I had watched where he went, because I didn't see where he went.
They just disappear. Hey, Marilyn and Lionel, we only have about a minute left here. And Lionel, as far as I'm concerned, I want to thank you for being on the program. I know you have a very busy schedule, my friend. So
yeah, I do.
You simply go take off and take care of business. And I want to thank you for being on the show as usual. Talk to you soon, Lionel, okay?
Very great pleasure, George. I'll be back anytime you want me.
Lionel Fanthorpe, he is one of the best. He does every Christmas Eve I play, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, which Lionel gave us a copy of. He recorded it especially for Coast to Coast. And I'm telling you, it is probably one of the greatest renditions. And he's got to run. He's off to a funeral today, of all things that he has to do. So we're going to let him go. And don't forget, on our next Coast to Coast program, as I mentioned, Friday the 13th, open lines, plus, of course, an always a little spooky thing tossed in there for you. If you ever need to email me, why don't you just make it out to george@coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget the Friday night prayers list. Send me an email of somebody you care about. I need the name and the ailment or what's wrong with them. They go on the prayers list. Everybody prays on Friday. And you know what? We've had some very miraculous things happening. And it is somewhat magical indeed. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.